In the decade that Eric Rosen has been artistic director at the KC Rep, he's put the local theater company on the national map. He's had some notable hits. He's also taken some risks and ruffled some feathers, which might not come as a total shock considering he called himself the least conservative artistic director the company's ever seen. Before he leaves town, we want to hear Eric's perspective on local audiences, what they expect from theater, what they've been receptive to. And maybe not so much. Later in the show, you'll get your chance to do the same. I'm Gina Kaufman and Eric Rosen. Welcome to KCUR's Central Standard.
Hi, Gina Kaufman.
You are leaving town today.
Tomorrow.
Oh, tomorrow.
But the news of my departure is a bit exaggerated because I'll be back and forth all the way through January finishing up projects. So sort of leaving, coming back next Thursday.
But your movers are moving your stuff now.
As we speak.
That's so funny. What is going through your mind other than moving logistics?
You know, I've been hanging out at the theater helping with the current show, a new musical called Last Days of Summer, watching the entire operation move in this beautiful way that I can now look at from a distance because it's not my problem or responsibility. But to see this gorgeous set and these amazing artists and these Tony Award nominated directors and all of our local actors and just everyone working together to make this new musical. And I think back to what the Rep was when I arrived in May of 2008. And I just don't think you'd believe it, you know, that we're the same theater city, that we're the same theater company.
Tell me more about when you arrived in 2008, what your impressions were back then.
Well, everything from if you remember the old Rep before we renovated 4 years ago, it was, you know, a 70s UMKC building. And you walked in, you felt
the
a little
sad.
The space
itself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So even the space, I think, is representative of what we achieved as a team. My colleagues, Angela Guerras and I, led the campaign to build the new Spencer. An artist came up to me last night and said, oh, my God, this is the best theater in all the regional theaters. And I was that to me is emblematic of how much has changed. So we went from being one of the most neglected physical infrastructures, one of the most underused set of artistic resources. And I think the explosion that the Rep has seen is also the explosion that Kansas City has seen in this decade.
So describe the explosion, as you put it, that Kansas City has seen.
Well, remember, you know, back in 2008, there were probably half as many theater companies. The venerated institutions like the New Theater and the Unicorn and the Coterie were all here and doing just fine. And now I look around at where everyone's working, and there are companies I haven't heard of that are new in the 3 months that I've been sort of out of town. You know, there's young people staying in Kansas City to create theater, both at the Rep and at the other theaters, and making their own companies. It's funny now that the Living Room, which was brand new when I got here, is now kind of, you know, an old stalwart compared to some of the younger companies that are popping up.
Those little upstarts.
I love those little upstarts because I started a little theater in Chicago that is still going 23 years later. So that really feels like my roots.
You did, though, come to Kansas City as this ambitious new voice, as someone basically saying to the local theater community and the city on the whole, like, Kansas City can do more. So it felt like, I think, a challenge, but also a compliment.
I hope so, because I directed in Kansas City twice. So I knew the scene, I knew the theater, I knew what it could do. I loved the shows I did here, and I loved the audience's response to both of them. It was Metamorphoses and Trip to Bountiful. So I knew what I was getting into, right?
But when you say that, what do you mean?
Meaning, I knew
what I was getting into.
I knew Kansas City versus if I had gotten a job in New Mexico where I'd never been, didn't know the people, didn't know the place. When I was interviewing for the position 11 years ago, I remember just saying to the board over and over again, "Are you sure?" I ran a little gay and lesbian theater company doing really socially progressive work only on new plays. And deep community engagement transformation work with LGBTQ kids, came in to run this very august, very respected institution, and was asked to take it in a new direction. And when they hired me, they really said yes, that's what they wanted to do. I was as surprised as anyone.
So talk to me more about that, though. I mean, did you feel like your roots were setting you up to ruffle feathers in a way?
I think that if I didn't ruffle feathers in 10 years, I did it wrong. You know, that the I came in with a very ambitious agenda, a very different aesthetic. My first show was that hip-hop musical Clay right before it went to Lincoln Center. So I was immediately putting the rep on a national scale, bringing shows to New York. I was working on commissions from Center Theater Group in Los Angeles and the Public Theater in New York. And so it was already in motion from the second I got here. And I think there was... the biggest fear is that I wouldn't honor and respect the traditions of the rep and particularly the local theater community. And one of the things I'm most proud of is that actually the opposite happened. The number of actors at the rep who make their lives and livings here in Kansas City increased from something like 50% to something like 75 or 80%. Really, out-of-town actors are the exception, not the rule. We love all of our actors. But really getting in and engaging with Kansas City artists to me was one of the best parts of the job, that I found a community here, people I love, people I will miss dearly. I'm not going to cry.
But tell me more about that decision about, you know, shining a light on local talent versus importing someone with a big name and a bigger career from a bigger market. Because there are times, there have been many examples of when you have brought in big name talent and that has been what has really been marketed about any given play.
Sure. Well, I think that's, you know, if that big name talent is the writer or the director or one of the stars, you know, that's part of the business. But these theaters were founded to create theater economies in cities outside of New York. That's why this movement of regional theaters, of which the rep is was an early pioneer, it's why it happened. And I think when I looked at the history, the 40-year history, of the company, really going back and honoring our university partnership, honoring the intention of the founders, always the intention of the company forever. So we're here to serve Kansas Cityans, but we're also here to elevate Kansas City to a national level. So bringing in Tony-nominated actors only elevates and changes the careers of the people who work with them.
What does an artistic director do exactly?
I'll tell you next time I do it. Yeah, I mean, it's curatorial. I'm sort of artistically, every decision that gets made ultimately has to get approved by me, from who the actors are, who the designers are, but really picking seasons that reflect certain priorities and certain goals the artistic director and his or her team set. So those changed over the years. We came in one way. A few years later, we reassessed. That's one part of the job. There's a public-facing part, which is how to sell these ideas of the value of the theater, what it can do, its philanthropic need, its service to the community, sort of articulator in chief, right? And then there's the part that I did more of than I expected to, which is institution building. How do I partner with an executive director like Angela to build our budget from $6 million to $9 million per year? How do we build partnerships with New York producers to bring revenue to Kansas City that doesn't take from the local community but goes back into the community? How do we build a building? You know, that those parts, I think those are the three major components.
So what did you mean? You've gotten at this a little bit, but when you did famously call yourself the least conservative artistic director the rep has had, I mean, to start with, how do you define conservatism in theater?
Well, I was only the fourth, so what? It sounds like a bigger claim than it was. I think I was young when I said that, and I'm not sure that it was that it remains true. But I think there is, in these institutions, a pull towards classics, towards conserving literally the tradition, right? So the word conservative in a positive sense, meaning we are here to make sure that Kansas Cityans can see Death of a Salesman, Raisin in the Sun, Shakespeare. But we're also progressive in the sense that we have to look forward and balance a program that is addressing major ideas by major playwrights, giving emerging playwrights a voice and a place, and launching careers that are going to have a lasting national impact from this company. So I think that's the balance that I struggled with over the 10 years, sometimes happily, sometimes less so. But I learned a lot about the classics that I never knew, being a guy who had only directed new plays when I got here.
Give me one of the examples of a time when you struck that balance happily and a time when you did it less so.
My favorite, the rep story I'll take to my grave is my second season. We did not do Christmas Carol. We did A Christmas Story, the musical. And when I announced to the board that we were replacing Christmas Carol with the world premiere of a Broadway bound musical. I believe the Kansas City Star headline the next day was Interloping Jew Kills Christmas. It was such a scandal, and I had no idea, because I'd only been here 5 months. And
that is not literally what the headline was.
No, I was just joking. but it made the front page of the Star, and I was like, what is going on? I didn't understand the tradition. And thank God, A Christmas Story became one of our largest hits. It did go to Broadway. It got nominated for a Tony for Best Musical. And it worked out, and it sold incredibly well here. It became the highest grossing show in the Rep's history until Christmas Carol finally surpassed it, I think, last year or the year before. So
it is interesting to me, even in a joke form, though, that that is how you felt. The response is that you, as this person who is feeling sort of like an outsider and an other in a lot of ways, yeah, outside of this tradition of A Christmas Carol, that's where you felt like kind of that was coming from.
I didn't know how brave and gutsy it was. And if I, probably 5 years later, I wouldn't have done it. And I'm glad I did it, because it really transformed so many things for the Rep. And it made audiences realize that new visions, new ideas could be really fun, audience friendly, family friendly. It doesn't have to be super avant-garde and strange, though sometimes it is. That Christmas Story worked was, the beginning of my real impact on the institution.
A Christmas Carol is in Kansas City, and especially I would guess for the Rep, it is this thing that Kansas City has its own relationship with, I feel like.
Sure.
And I also am Jewish, but I kind of count myself in that, which is surprising to me because I am not necessarily someone who gravitates toward the production of the play I've known for years. That's not my tendency. Mm-hmm. And I would say A Christmas Carol is a weird exception. What do you think it's about? Do you have a theory?
I do, because I rewrote Christmas Carol last year, did a new adaptation after 30-something years. So I got to live for a year while I was writing that adaptation inside everything in the Rep's traditions, inside the text and the reason that Christmas Carol endures as an iconic American story. It's not as popular in England. It's so important to American identity that I kind of got to live inside of it and realize that the story isn't about Christmas necessarily. It's about redemption and how imagination can save us.
How, in some ways, imagining the worst possible outcome can save us.
Absolutely. Scaring the crap out of yourself can save the world. But I grew to love it, and I do love I love the adaptation. I love the engagement with actors over and over again in a meaningful way every year. And I love the feeling in the theater with our audience. It's so fun seeing kids dressed up and taking pictures. And now that I'm a father myself, I feel like I'm going to be going to a lot of Christmas carols.
What do you think of as some of your other big successes? And I don't mean just artistically. I mean when it comes to your own, like, sense of whether you hit the mark with your audience.
Sure. I mean, I think my greatest hits list would be Venice, the musical I co-wrote with Matt Sachs, would be my production of Cabaret, which was very edgy and sold like crazy. I loved my production of Death of a Salesman and my production of August Osage County, which both focused exclusively on Kansas City actors. So we really developed a sense of ensemble and teamwork and deepened my relationship with the community. And then a major thing is the launch of the Origin KC Festival of New American Plays as a now institution that gave us a place and a space to do our edgier, more complicated, more potentially divisive productions.
Divisive how?
Meaning it is not the goal of that program for audiences to come and agree, right? After every performance, we have a community conversation so that audiences can get into it with each other about what they saw.
Do they?
They do. It's amazing. We can't get people to stay for shows after regular performances or classics, but after a new play, people want to talk. And if it's push some buttons, if it's raised some controversy, what I love the most is people talking civilly with each other about potentially really explosive ideas and concepts.
Can you tell me about a time when that happened, what the conversation was about, how people expressed themselves?
Sure. Year before last, we did Larissa Fast Horse's play, What Would Crazy Horse Do? That intertwined a story of a dying First Nations tribe the twin siblings who are the last living members of this tribe, and a potential collaboration with the Ku Klux Klan. And it was incendiary. I mean, it's a complicated play, and it brings up all sorts of ideas and questions about racial purity, how racial purity can mean one thing to people from First Nations and something else to members of the Klan. And we're doing this in the middle of the transition from the Obama administration to the Trump administration. And it was the audience's conversations. To me, I was so proud because people were so respectful. Even if they vehemently disagreed with someone else in the room, that they would. It's the last example I can think of people talking about the most complicated issues of our time in ways that felt loving and art loving, you know, towards the play, towards the playwright, and towards our having done it.
So we've talked about some of the experiences you've had where you feel like you've really hit the mark with what audiences wanted. Can there sometimes be more of a gap between what satisfies your creative vision and what pleases an audience or maybe doesn't?
I think where I've probably the shows that I would not, you know, I love all my children, but the shows that didn't do what I expected them to do often were times when I thought, this is a very conservative choice, right? This is a safe choice. We need to balance this with something else. So I can't remember which season it was, but I think my second or third, we were doing Nathan Jackson's play Brookology about an African-American family dealing with the decline of the patriarch set in KCK. And I thought, wouldn't it be fun to balance that with a crowd pleaser like William Inge's Bus Stop? You couldn't get into Brokeology. We couldn't give tickets away to Bus Stop. The audience didn't. It felt too on the nose, right, for what we should be doing. When we did The Foreigner, a comedy I love by a tragically short-lived playwright named Larry Hsu, we got a lot of blowback saying this is not of the intellectual sophistication that we expect from the rep. And those are two examples where I thought I was doing what you're supposed to do. And the response from our audience was, that's not what we want. That's not we want it to be somewhere between conservative and progressive and not safe.
So this is a great transition to, like, how would you describe Kansas City audiences? And do you need to make a distinction between what those audiences expect of the rep and what they expect just in general?
I know what they expect of the rep, and I know I can compare Kansas City audiences to audiences in other cities because I've done a lot of plays that have gone right from Kansas City to New York or from Kansas City to LA. And I can tell you, like, you know, for example, our musical Venice, we never had a more loving, more embraced experience with that show, not in LA or New York, even though it was successful in both cities, as the kind of fandom that came from an audience that when they see something they love, they get really excited. Last year's Between the Lines, we didn't think it was going to be a huge hit. It was a massive hit. People came back and saw it 6 and 7 times, and it was a huge risk to do it.
What was risky about it for people who don't know what it was about?
Brand new musical, huge budget, a world premiere of a thing in progress that none of us knew exactly what it was.
It didn't yet have the stamp of approval of a bigger market.
Sure. And it was as huge as almost as big as Christmas Carol. So we were spending all this money, a lot of it from investors in other cities, and it had to hit, you know what I mean? and thankfully it did. And I think what I've seen change of our audience over the decade is an embrace of the new. And the idea of a new play being an advantage, not a disadvantage, right? That we've had so many new plays that have been really fun, really exciting, really powerful that I don't think our audiences shy away from it. And I think they're, in a way, warmer than audiences in New York or LA.
How do you measure an audience's response? Because another thing people say about Kansas City audiences is that, like, even a standing ovation here doesn't necessarily mean that something was awesome.
It does.
Like, they might go home and be like, that was fine.
Yeah. You know? I know. I can tell because I live here, or did. And, you know, if I'm going to the grocery store and people are coming up to me to talk about the play, I know it's working, right? And I can also, it's my job as a theater director to sit in the room and breathe with an audience. And I can absolutely tell the difference between an audience that's being polite and an audience that is really fired up. And I know the fired up version, they might stand up for every play of the season, but I know they only loved three. You know what I mean? And that's a lot. If you're doing six or seven plays, to love three and remember them is I think, our greatest hope.
So do you – we're nearing the end of our time, and I wonder if you have a parting message for your local audiences.
My greatest hope for the Rep and for whoever becomes the next leader when the search is completed and for our audience is that that we lose any sense that Kansas City is second tier or that it's not a major city, that it's not a major market, that that there's no need to apologize for our own taste, our own excitement, our own we don't have to compare all the time, right, to other cities and other places. And I think the growth of the Kansas City brand as a brand that embraces entrepreneurship and creativity and artistic excellence, that wasn't here 10 years ago.
That's a new kind of brand that we see ourselves as having. Yeah. But do you think that we live up to that?
I think we're getting there. I feel very optimistic for the future of all of the arts in Kansas City. I think it's an extraordinary time to be here.
So where exactly are you headed tomorrow?
Well, it's a complicated story, but we are my husband and son and I are relocating to New York or returning to New York.
And what do you think is the mark that you've left on the Rep or Kansas City?
I think the notion that a theater in Kansas City could be among the best in the country is aspirational. It's not true yet, but it could be true. And I think that I hope that I've inspired our audiences and our board and our supporters and other theater companies to strive to be a world-class theater city, to strive to be the very best. And as we push and try, we get better.
How has Kansas City changed you?
I think, I'll start to cry. I met my husband here. I became myself in Kansas City. I was 37 when I got here. I'm older than that now. And I'm leaving with a family and a career and a whole different idea of what theater can be and what it can do. And it will always be one of the two major things I've done in my life.
Eric Rosen, thank you so much for speaking with me today, and best of luck to you.
Thanks, Gina.
Eric Rosen is leaving town after a decade as artistic director at the Kansas City Repertory Theater. So what do you think of Kansas City's theater scene and Kansas City's audiences? What do people here want? What could we be more receptive to? Or what do you want to, what do you like? I'm Gina Kaufman. 816-235-2888 is the number to call. This is KCUR Central Standard. We're back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR Central Standard. And today we're looking at theater in Kansas City, what kind of theater town we are and what kind of theater town you wish we could be. 816-235-2888 is the number to call. And we want to hear from you, whether you're a theater regular or someone who maybe would catch more shows if the scene were different in some crucial way. 816-235-2888 is the number to call. I'm here with Grace Suh, an arts critic and writer who enjoys theater from the vantage point of the audience, and Victor Wishna. He's a playwright. Hi, guys.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
So let's start with your assessments of the local theater offerings here in town, and we'll get to audience tastes and predispositions. What do we tend to get a lot of, and are there some things that you might find in other cities that local audiences don't get as much of a chance to see?
I would say that there is, and certainly over the last several years, this continues to grow, that there is really a breadth and a variety to Kansas City's theater scene. I think for decades there's always been KC Rep and the Unicorn and sort of, you know, the stalwart regional theater and then the smaller professional theater that sort of did what was ever hot off Broadway the previous year. But now in recent years, you see more of a explosion, might be a strong word, but a growth of small, almost storefront theaters that are bringing in a mix of classics and new works and some that are dedicating themselves to new works. So I think there is maybe more than people even realize in town.
Grace, what do you think?
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I was just looking at the season ahead and kind of looking at everyone's seasons. And honestly, I was joking with a friend of mine with whom I see theater a lot. I feel like I almost have to make a spreadsheet of all the things I want to see and when we can go see them, because there is a lot. And I totally agree with Victor that there is an incredible breadth. I mean, obviously, Casey Actors and the Met and other companies kind of revisit classics. And then there are, the Unicorn is really reliable in that you can kind of see this year what opened last year. And then there are all these regional community theaters. And I'm thinking of Theater in the Park, for instance, has this new indoor space at the Johnson County Arts Center. And so their season is expanding, the Barn and Culture House and all those places that are kind of filling in the interstices of taste and bringing in new work, like the Living Room is, and really whatever you want to see is there. I think that you do have to kind of search for it.
What does searching for it look like? If people aren't already doing that, how do they search? How would you recommend going about it?
Well, I mean, as an audience member, what I would love is a central hub. That's all I ask. Simplify my life and simplify everyone's life and have a central hub to which you can go and see what see what's playing this week, this month, sortable by musical or something new there's not that. And so what you have to do is kind of go to people's websites, but then, these are small companies that don't have marketing crews and don't update their websites. And then you have to go into their Facebook pages and it gets a little tedious. And I can understand that people don't want to go to all that work. You have to be pretty tenacious. And so it would be lovely if people didn't have to go to that effort.
Yeah. I mean, I would agree that that's a work in progress. And, that there, like Arts KC does have Arts KC Go, which is a website, but as Grace was saying, a lot of it is dependent on a lot of the theater companies themselves getting the word out. They're uploading their own listings to central repositories that do exist, and also, and frankly, I don't know if this is off topic, but I'm glad we're having this conversation because arts coverage, specifically for theater, is something that would go a long way, to grow exposure. There are just, there isn't as much feature writing, or reviews out there to let people know what's going on, when it's going on. Though there are, if you put in just a little bit of work, social media is the new frontier to be getting updates about what theaters are doing in town.
So for the two of you, just so that people, as we go forward, have a sense of who they're listening to, let's establish a little bit about your own backgrounds and likes and dislikes as theater goers before we proceed.
Okay. My backgrounds with theater. I've always been fascinated by theater, and I think like anyone who has an interest, I may have started with the classics growing up. And then once I was a journalist as well as a theater fan and started to cover some of the arts, I became more aware of what was happening in more contemporary spaces and newer works. And then eventually when I started writing plays myself in the last several years, found myself inspired by the classics as for how they were groundbreaking at the time when they were first created and presented. And for that same reason, really appreciate getting a chance to see something new and different and hear new voices. For me, what I really love about theater is that perhaps more than any other, I'll stand by what I'm about to say. Yeah, perhaps more than any other art form, at least that I'm drawn to, it has the ability to tell stories, to humanize stories, almost just by the simple fact that what you are seeing are actual people on a stage sharing the room with you, telling a story that either maybe you knew but you haven't seen in this way, or even better, a story that you did not know before from a perspective you did not know before. And I think that's a really important role that theater has always played, whether it was in Shakespeare's time or in hearing new stories from halfway around the world or writers that we haven't heard before.
Can you give me an example of a recent theater experience you had in Kansas City where you, that thing that you love about theater, that thing you just described, was really fulfilled?
I can think of, there's probably several, if I think for, I know we don't have all day, I could come up with a bunch, but one that pops into mind, I think, I don't know if it was last year's season at the Unicorn, I'm blanking on the name, Eclipsed, which was a play that was on Broadway. So not exactly a, like it got a lot of press when it was in New York, but it hadn't been to Kansas City. And it's set during the Second Liberian War. It's essentially, the entire setting is a room full of five young women who were being used as really as sex slaves by a warlord who was running that part of Liberia during the Civil War. And it's just a story that I wasn't aware of. And I may have, you know, in the 90s when it was happening, may have been aware of it in the news, but suddenly I was in the room with these people and I knew some of the actors, you know, so, and yet theater, that's the other thing. Theater is this, the phrase suspension of disbelief, but it really is this idea that I felt I was halfway around the world in a different decade watching someone who I actually knew personally embody this person. I felt like I was part of their story.
Grace, let's have this same kind of conversation with you, basically, like your own background, your own likes and dislikes, what it is that you hope for when you head out to the theater.
Okay. So I come from New York City, and I have always gone to a lot of theater. And in New York, obviously, there's a huge breadth of theater. I subscribed to, you know, Playwrights Horizon and Midtown and Theater in the Round, and I had actor friends and playwright friends, so I often went to Worcester Group in Ohio. And on the avant-garde side, you know, I loved La Mama and Ontological Hysterical Theater. So I really saw the breadth of theater and was kind of a bit of a, you know, just a theater geek. And when we moved to Kansas City, I thought to myself, one of the things I will be giving up is the theater that I love so much. And I got here, and right after we moved here, they had Into the Woods, the Moises Kaufman production here at the KC Rep. And I was just in tears because I realized, oh, they do have theater here and electricity too. So that's nice. And then I started to see more and more theater because, you know, no one is as parochial and close-minded as a New Yorker. So I realized that I had been completely close-minded and that there is a wonderful arts scene here and a theater scene here, and began to go to a lot of theater. And then I was lucky enough to be the theater critic at The Pitch. And so then for work, I saw theater I wouldn't have seen, you know, community theater, and kind of tried to really get down on the ground and see things at the fringe. And I just think that the difference in the past 5 years, you know, like Victor said, not an explosion, but definitely a real burgeoning. And it just feels like a real fecund moment right now where smaller companies are coming into their own.
That being said, is there something of the theater that you had at your disposal in New York that you have not yet found here?
You know, I think that your question is trying to ask about programming. And it may be true that, you know, there's not a La Mama level of avant-garde theater here. But to me, what I miss the most is audience. So I go to KC Actors, I go to the Met, I pretty much go to all the theaters around. I'm a subscriber, and I am dismayed at the lack of audience. It's really disheartening because there is really good work here, and I think there just needs to be that meeting of the artists and the audience. I think the audience is out there, but they have to be reached. I would love to go to a theater and see young people. I would love to see people of all different ethnicities. I would love to see people my age. I go to a lot of theater where people, and octogenarians are wonderful people. If just we need 40-year-olds and 30-year-olds and 20-year-olds. That's what I want to see.
So people out there who don't go to theater, what would it take? What do you need to hear from local theater companies? See what is the understanding you have of what is happening in the theater that is not of interest to you. 816-235-2888. Rich is calling us from Overland Park. Hi, Rich.
Hi, very good discussion. First of all, I agree with what your two guests have said about the value of theater. It is terrific in Kansas City. I am over 70, and I am one of those folks who likes theater, but unfortunately, a lot of it I can't afford, so that limits what I can do. Mm-hmm. Now, your producer asked me to describe the kind of theater I do like, and I told him I like serious theater, and I gave him a few examples, but one of the best examples I know of was Fences last year at the Rep.
Yeah, August that was Wilson. Great.
And I became aware of August Wilson through the Rep. I had never heard of him until then. And I've seen a lot of plays there over the years, Cherry Orchard, Seagull, Major Barbara. I'm not sure what else I've seen there. Death of a Salesman. I always wanted to see Death of a Salesman because I read it and I didn't get much out of reading it. But seeing it in the on the theater makes it come to just amazingly vivid. So anyway, and by the way, is that Victor Wishna?
Yes.
Oh,
yes,
I know. Victor, I'm a friend of your father's, Rich.
Oh. All right. Well, nice to talk to you.
Rich, but about your love for serious theater, do you find that that you can find what you're looking for pretty easily?
To some degree, I can. I'm looking at the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater's mm-hmm. upcoming season, and they're doing Seven Guitars by August Wilson, mm-hmm. Cherry Orchard by Chekhov, one I don't know about, Orphan's Home, I've never heard of it, and a thing called City of Angels, I don't know anything about those. But, yeah, they're doing two really fine plays, and I think the Rep had a couple I like, too. I can't... The Rep, let's see, what's the Rep doing?
Well, Rich, you sound like a very satisfied customer. Is that accurate, or do you want to add in a caveat?
They ought to have a senior discount at all these theaters that's substantial, that allows me to go. I mean, it's like $2 off at a lot of things. That makes no difference.
I agree with you. Cost, I think, is a real barrier. And I will point out, if you're familiar with the Unicorn, you might want to check out their season. They have a really great season ahead, and they have pay what you can nights, and I don't think that a lot of people know about that, and so during the week their shows are pay what you can, and you know, you can pay $5, you can pay $10, and so I would really encourage you to look up nights like that.
So Rich is telling us that he loves really like sort of thought-provoking plays with a serious message and an issue at the core of it. Scott is tweeting us that he would like to see more fun plays. I mean, do you think that there is, that maybe we do the thought-provoking thing to excess, or is Scott just not aware of some of his options maybe?
I think that's a very good point. I mean, I think that And you know, as I was saying before, that theater is as a place to tell stories. Sometimes there it comes across as that could be the perception that theater, and even as the previous caller Rich was saying, that he liked serious theater. Well, that word can be appealing to some people, and it can be off-putting to others. But serious can be hilarious yeah. as well. I mean, some of my favorite shows, I mean, things that I've seen in Kansas City and elsewhere, and the things that I try to write I couldn't imagine writing something that was completely serious, but also didn't go down with a bit of humor. And I think, but more to his question or his point, I'm trying to think of recent examples. There certainly is maybe Grace can help me. There certainly are slapstick examples. I know that the Rep did The Foreigner a couple of years ago, which was just completely ridiculous, but had a point.
Yeah, and Annie Baker is hilarious.
Yes, and serious.
Know, yeah. yeah, in the next room. The
Annie Baker. We actually have someone else tweeting that he would like to see an Annie Baker play.
Yeah, so Casey Rapp did Circle Mirror Transformation mm-hmm. a couple of seasons ago, and it was hysterical. I would say that The Unicorn does at least one solid comedy a season. That Sarah Rule play in The Next Room was just pure slapstick. But I know what you mean by the comedy and by lighthearted plays. I think that honestly, I think that's why new theater, if you want to look at a theater in town that is successful and that does gangbusters, it's new theater. It's the Dinner Theater in Overland Park that does things like Nonsense and, you know, and it's and they do, you know, right down the line comedies, and they're very popular. And what was the theater that used to be in Crown Center? American
Heartland?
Yes.
Yes,
That was their stock and trade, and I always enjoyed going to them. I mean, who needs, you know, everybody needs to have some lightheartedness in these days. And I totally agree with you, Scott.
Well, we are going to take a short break, but you still have a chance to talk about what kind of theater we have too much of, what we don't get enough of, what makes you really satisfied with your experience when you go to a play, or if you don't go to plays, why not? 816-235-2888. You'll be talking with Grace Suh and Victor Wishna, and we'll be right back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and we're talking about local theater and what local theater audiences want with Grace Suh and Victor Wishna. And Victor, you are a playwright, and I'm curious about how much you think about audience and who's likely to be in that audience when you write a play.
It's a very interesting question. I think that I do and I don't, because the fact of the matter is, when you're first putting something together or an idea is turning into a play, the audience that you're thinking about is not necessarily the audience who, although it's nice to dream and say, oh, this is going to be, because first of all, you don't know that this play will ever be in front of an audience. You don't know if it will ever get past the fifth page. You don't know if anyone will ever see it, including whether you would ever even want to look at it again. But once it's looking like it's going to become something, and I find that I'm writing for someone, but it's not necessarily who I think. I'm not thinking audience demographics of. It's more, what's a story that I want to tell that I feel like I can tell, and if it's a story that intrigues me and surprises me. I know this sounds very self-obsessed that I'm the audience I'm writing for, but it's really that if you're able to surprise and interest yourself as you're writing it, then that's a really good sign that it might be surprising and intriguing and engaging for someone else.
You're kind of reminding me of, there's like a saying I heard once that you should never give a gift you wouldn't want to receive.
Well, that's definitely, yeah, that would definitely be true. Yeah, you should be writing a play that you wouldn't buy a ticket for. So, well, I'll say that.
I guess the nature of my question is kind of, I'm wondering how much of the local original theater we see is created in dialogue with a sense of the local audience.
I mean, I definitely think that, I mean, as someone who started writing plays once I was back in Kansas City, and I grew up in Kansas City, but I was in New York for about 12 years. And when I first came back here, I started writing for KC Metropolis of recent blessed memory, which gave me a chance to see a wide range of shows, not just at Rep and Unicorn, but other small theaters. And there is definitely a Kansas City voice. And so you can't help but be affected by that, by what you're writing, by thinking of the people you know who go to theater. It may, not necessarily on a subconscious level, but that they're... I do strive for that. I have no interest in writing something that someone sitting on the East or West Coast could write. That is definitely a part of what I do, is the voice that I can bring. And it comes out in stories that I'm trying to tell that might be set more locally or involve people who I know from Kansas City that are characters you wouldn't necessarily find in other parts of the country or the world.
So do you think that part of what it's important to reflect on a stage is the experiences that local people are bringing to that theater?
I think that is definitely a part of it. And it would sort of be the other side of the coin to what I was saying earlier about how theater can transport you to another part of the world or another time, is that even in those stories that might be, and especially if they are not based in history or fact, there, something needs to engage the audience that is in the room with you, or it won't work.
Grace, what are your thoughts on this? On the dialogue between the people creating theater and the people coming to see theater?
It's interesting, because I think that, Victor, you were saying earlier that there's a universal quality to theater. In terms of the dialogue between the makers and the audience, that is what makes theater so special. It's that suspension of belief. I think it's a communal project between the performers and the audience to create together an experience that's different from night to night. And it's the electricity in the air between the stage and the audience. And that's what makes it such a universal experience. It's also what makes it such a specific experience. I mean, the inspecificity is the universality. I mean, that I don't, not to sound yoga, but the more specific it is, the more human it is. And so it can be a story about a PTA mom in Johnson County, or it can be a story about, you know, like the African plays that that they have been doing at the Unicorn. And the more specific it is, the more anyone can relate to it, even if it's completely removed from your experience.
Let's talk to Jean and Waldo. Hi, Jean.
Hi. What I look for in my theater is I want to not notice the passage of time while I'm watching it, and I want something to think about later, even in a comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And the three that popped out at me last year that I saw at the Rep were Between the Lines and the new adaptation of A Christmas Carol, I thought was excellent, and also The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime, which were all some of the best theater I've seen at the Rep in the last few years. I also like what The Unicorn does. I really enjoyed My Name is Asher Lev from a few years ago. But that's what I'm looking for. But expense is also, I'm semi-retired, expense is also an issue when it comes to my theater-going habits.
Well, so that we're hearing that a lot.
Yes, I know. And even some of the community theater around town is starting to edge up into the kind of sort of expensive range.
Well, so I'm interested in putting these comments we're hearing about this prohibitive cost of attending theater in the context of, Grace, your comment that there isn't enough of an audience. Mm-hmm. When each, if you don't, the more people you have, the less you can afford to charge each individual, I would think.
That's right. I mean, it's obviously a struggle on both sides. So the production companies are working on bare bones budgets and not paying their performers, and then on the audience side, and I feel you, Jean. I pay for my tickets out of pocket as well, and you know, $45 for times two for the night. That's a lot of money, and it's just a lot to invest on unknown. And I will say this. So I was in New York over the summer and had the opportunity to see a play at Playwrights Horizon, and it was a fabulous experience. And then 2 days later, I came back to Kansas City, and I went to Theater in the Park and saw Into the Woods, and it was $5 a person, and I took, you know, my kids and their friends, and it was just delightful. I mean, you know, I thought the level of production was surprisingly solid, and it was you know, Gina, when you asked Victor that question, what recent production have you seen that was magical and that was really transportative, that was a perfect evening. It was in Shawnee Mission Park. It was beautiful. The audience was large. There were kids running. I mean, it was, no one would say it was a pristine theater experience. There were literally children running around. And yes, I mean my kids. you know, and babies crying and people lolling around. And it was magical and perfect.
I guess this makes me wonder if you think that part of what's keeping people from theater is an expectation of what it should be, rather than maybe like open-mindedness, just go and let yourself experience it and then decide.
That's true, but I don't put the onus on the audience. I put the I don't think it's the audience's fault. I think it can be intimidating, and I think that, and I totally understand the cost element, and I totally understand the all those other barriers to entry. I think that someone needs to bridge the arts and the audience.
Well, our time is up, but Grace, stay in touch with all your observations as you keep going to local plays.
Thank you.
Victor Wishna, it's great having you.
Thank you.
Great you may here. Recognize Victor's voice because he's often on Up to Date talking about sports. Well, we are on our way out, but you can send us your thoughts at on Twitter. We are at KCURCST, and this conversation will be available later today at kcur.org/centralstandard. That's also where you can find our other recent shows, like last week's conversation about pedestrians. That was lively. kcur.org/centralstandard. This show is produced by Melody Rowell with Coy Duggar, Kathleen Pointer, and Suzanne Hogan. Sylvia Maria Gross is our senior producer, and I'm Gina Kaufman. Up to Date's next.